are sitting in this beautifully painted purple, different lavenders and blues room, studio, beautiful studio, in a dimly lit space. And we're here with Britley, and we're very excited to be talking to Britley about our book, Stony, The Waves and the Silver Lining. This is Bonnie Buford, and I'm with Nancy Stoneberg, who's the star of the show.
That's awesome. Well, welcome. I'm here with Nancy and Bonnie.
Yes.
These beautiful, creative, intelligent women. And they wrote a book together.
Yes, we did.
And do you want to jump in? Let's see. Tell me about the book. Just start. We'll start there.
We talk about how, well, where do we start with where we met?
The book, in a nutshell, is truly, it's a story about a horrible, horrible tragedy, mm-hmm. but a tragedy that ends up having, we say the silver lining certainly, but that tragedy ends up being softened mm-hmm. because of the silver lining that occurred that, you know, I would say most people that have tragedy and death, mm-hmm. Very hard to see or feel anything good ever, certainly, but as a result of this tragedy, there's change, and change has offered the silver lining, some beauty in it.
Now, the book is called Stony, and it was written by Bonnie, and it's a story of Nancy, right?
And it was actually co-authored with the two of us, and so if we just want to back up, Nancy and I have been friends for many, many, many years, over 20 years, and we had kind of went different ways. Just our children went to different high schools, and that always changes things, mm-hmm. right? We knew each other early on when the kids were little, and then, we've always gotten along. We were always friends, but I hadn't seen her for a long time, and so we were actually downtown Robbinsdale at Nona Rosa's. My husband and I were at Nona Rosa's, and on the patio that faces the wharf, mm-hmm. and we're just having afternoon cocktails on a beautiful September afternoon, and out walks Nancy from the wharf. And so I yell across the street, "Hey, Nancy." And she came over, we started talking and just asking how she was doing with everything. And this was still 6 years later after mm-hmm. Mark died. Uh-huh. And he passed in 2013. And so this was 19. And so as she was speaking, she's just telling, you know, saying how whenever she talks about the chaos that happened, mm-hmm. losing him, that she gets dizzy, and if she has to talk about it. And she said, I could just get
traumatic.
It out.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about.
And so if I could just get it in some form of a semblance, mm-hmm. that it would just help her heal. And she said, if mm-hmm. I could just write it, she said, but I'm not a writer. And so I said, I like to write. I'll write it with you, but it definitely was a co-authorship.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'm going to back up because I do feel like we jumped ahead.
Okay.
I want to talk about maybe a few things. I want to talk about the book, about how what's it about, and it's about your husband, losing your husband, and that happened 9 years ago, February, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we won't get too into it because people can read the book, but maybe just summarize kind of like, you know, kind of what happened in the beginning to how you decided to write about it. Should we start there? Should we talk about that?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. In the beginning, as far as the story itself.
Yeah, just sum it up. Don't go into crazy details. Well, they can read the book.
Sure. One of the things that Bonnie says always to say is it's a love story, certainly, because in order for people to be able to feel and experience the whole story, it was important to have some of the background, too. So Mark and I were married for 26 and a half years, an amazing life. I had it all, and I don't mean as in monetary, but I had it all with children, family, community. An amazing husband, and I adored him, and he adored me. We were just now, Mark was 11 years older than I was. So he's kind of all I knew regarding life and experience and relationships.
Yeah.
I was 19 when I moved from North Dakota to Minneapolis.
Wow.
And I met him almost right away, and met him at 19, married him at 21, and he was 32. So, yeah, that in itself was wonderful, and I was ready, but and he certainly was too. So a love story, certainly, that it starts in, and starts with, and you know, the trip that I lost my mark was his retirement trip. He had worked for 40 years with the power company, and though we loved life and lived life all of our years of marriage, and that's important for people to know, because that's one of the takeaways from the story is, please, people, don't wait. Don't put it off. Don't think that you're going to, you know, do all this wonderful stuff together, you know, tomorrow or mm-hmm. when that time comes. We traveled together once a year, every year. It didn't have to be expensive. It could be as simple as getting in the car and driving south and going somewhere warm without the children from the get-go. We loved children, certainly, but it was real important. We felt to be together and always have that reconnect opportunity. So that was Mark, really the one saying, no, we are going to travel and do something together as a couple every year, at least once. And I was home with the children, and frankly, going away was a lot of work for me because my life was all fine at home. But it was, again, now looking back, holy smokes, right?
Yeah.
26 and a half years of always taking that time for each other. So I can say today, I don't have regrets.
Yeah.
You know, people say, oh, but he died. Yeah, he died. He did die.
Yeah.
But we lived and we loved and we shared. Mm-hmm. And we can say now, you know, we weren't the ones that said, oh, I wish I would have done the, I wish we would have done it sooner. And I think nowadays we hear about it more than ever. You know, retirement comes and all of a sudden something, even if a person doesn't die, something happens. So this story was our retirement vacation, by golly. Even though we traveled every year, this was going to be unique. Mark had been with the company 40 years, and we traveled with another couple to learn how to surf. Wow, right?
Wow.
And that was a goal. They knew of a location, and we were ecstatic about going along, and yeah, so that's how it started, and that was motivation behind it, is to go and be together, to learn how to surf, to start this new chapter of retirement together.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow, and then he went missing.
So we were there. We arrived on a Saturday, and it was on a Tuesday. We did some surfing with trainers. And then on the day that we lost him was on a Tuesday, and on that day he had went out with the other gentleman to a different beach because the waves had been a little too aggressive. So the girls, we decided to take a day off. We had already tried surfing for like 3 days, and we were exhausted and ripped up. And if you've not surfed before in rough water, let me tell you, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
So the boys ended up, we kind of sent them on their way to go and do their surfing. Mark had not gotten up on the board yet, and Mark is very, very challenges himself and very competitive. And so he hadn't gotten up on the board in those days we tried, and the surf instructor said, there's another beach that we can go to, and it'll be easier. So the boys go off, me and Liz stay, and let's say, you know, 4:30 in the afternoon, they come walking down the beach, pumped up and excited, and my Mark looked like a peacock, just glowing, and you know, that big old, and he had finally gotten up on the board.
Aww.
So we were, that was very important, and to see him so happy and so satisfied. And so they came back to the bungalow, which we're on a bungalow, we're in an open-air bungalow. There's like not much to speak of, doors or windows. I mean, you're open air, right?
Yeah.
Showering kind of outside. They came back and we wanted to celebrate a little bit before we go to dinner. And Sayulita is just this amazing, whimsical village.
Yeah.
Such an experience in itself from the moment you drive into this little village. But we're going to have cheese and crackers and listen to music and then go to dinner. And the sun was starting to set, and the boys decided they were going to go out for just a moment of body surfing, catch 2-3 waves, and then get ready and go to dinner. And it was during the body surfing, outright and kind of out in front of our bungalow, we all went out there, and Liz and I sat on the beach. It was a little too chilly, and thank God we did, because if we would have been in the water, you know, who knows what would have happened to us also. And the boys went out and caught one wave, and Mark was a pro at body surfing. His structure supported, he was like a surfboard, his body was, I kid you not. And then it was in an instant, and we're watching this whole thing, it's so exciting, and they catch a wave, and then the boys step out, and they go to about thigh high, thigh deep, and we're watching them, and it was just a bizarre moment where all of a sudden, instead of the men being side by side, my Mark was, you know, maybe, I don't know, 50 feet away. It was like just in a blink, and we realized something was going on, and he was facing us, and we yelled to him to get back in, because it was just like that. It was like he's there, they're side by side, and all of a sudden it was like a whoosh almost. He's still upright, we see him, we tell him to get back in, and he didn't see the sets coming in, and the water changed. It was almost like an instant, it just changed and it turned wild. And three waves came in. The first one hit him, it was a monster, and he never surfaced after the first, and then a second and a third, and the water never settled. And that's the thing too, to imagine, you know, if you've been to the ocean, you understand usually sets come and then all of a sudden it calms down. Well, not just that moment, but the day was that way, where it never offered a calm. So now the collection, the imagine the waves aren't stopping, the sun's hitting the water, so it's glare, and he goes under, we don't see him surface, and we're confident, though, that he's been swept under and probably out a little bit, caught in that rip, running the beach and screaming, because you don't see him, we don't see him, and there's no help, and there's no resources, and after 2 hours of running the beach and screaming and begging for somebody to get something in the water, there's no motorized vehicles on this beach either. The closest that you get to that would be a fishing boat from the local fishermen that pull their boats out of the water by a truck and put them far up because the type of, you know, tide that comes in and whatnot. So when I say there's nothing to put in the water except a surfboard, if you can find one and get it in and feel safe. So 2 hours.
But they were already closed for the day and the boats were already out.
Boats were all, yeah, everything was out of the water, and it's very... Spanish speaking, and we are not, but so 2 hours of screaming, and then finally a person of authority, I suppose a police or something, came down and said to us, within the 2 hours, we ended up finally getting somebody to get a fisherman down from the village and put a boat in the water, and it was for all of, I don't even know if it was 10 or 15 minutes, they put it in, they scooted around a little bit and said they didn't see him. So they pull it back in, and at 7:15 that evening, they said that we would need to wait until morning, and in the morning, they'd have people available for us, they said. Mm-hmm. Well, that didn't even soften the blow, obviously, because wait a minute, we know he's alive. We know he's out there, probably either treading water or holding on to something. We know he's there. He's a super strong swimmer, a silly wave, you know, or three waves wasn't going to take him down. And they're telling us that now we have to sit and wait until morning. And that's what I try still, is like, try and put your head around, get your head around being there, knowing and believing he's out there. Okay, and fine. There might be some, oh, well, what if you did think he was dead? Okay, well, even if you thought he had passed, he's there. He's right there. And they are telling you are going to wait through the evening, and then they say there will be people there available for you in the morning. Now, it was my husband.
That's okay? Your husband out
right.
there.
Right. What if it was your child? If it was your... It does anyone that you're with that you love... I mean, if it was your dog, imagine sitting there and waiting until...
It's not reasonable. You can't do it.
It's not. And to try and even get that through your head, and then the night, the endless night and the waves, and then to start the next morning waiting for the sun to come up and waiting for the crowds of people that are going to be out there in the water, and in the United States, of course, it would have happened right then, but let's just say, fine, we'll give them a day. Divers, boats, airplanes... And the next morning, there was no one. And we were very kindly informed by the snowbirds that are there that there are no resources. No one will come, and they are simply waiting for him to wash ashore wherever it may be. Period.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That is...
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, as you can tell, Nancy is a... She's... has just this beautiful gift of storytelling, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, we had 90 hours of recording sessions. I have a little cassette player still. And yeah. So we would record. And so actually taking her words and putting it into writing mm-hmm. was a beautiful experience. And we worked it together. So I would we would record, and then for an hour and a half, I would go back and I would listen to. I just write from what she wrote and create the story to try to bring the reader into what she just said.
Yeah.
And there's dialogue. There's action. It reads like it reads like fiction.
Yeah.
Because. As after what she just said, I mean, that all that was horrible enough, but then subsequently what happened after the other 5 days, it's you're shaking your head going, no, this can't be real. She didn't have to deal with that. And so, and we really did, the many people who've read the book
mm-hmm.
have said that they felt like they were there. And so together we accomplished not only her healing, but to actually bring it into, like some people have even said, this could be a movie, because the visuals are there and they felt like they were there. And because you bring in the background of, when they were in the village, because mm-hmm. they did spend 4 beautiful days together.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talk about the colors in the village and the sights and the sounds and the music and all the fun they had beforehand, And then, yeah. It's a love story. It's a tragedy.
Yeah.
But then again, there's that silver lining. Yeah.
Should make a movie.
Well, one thing I know when I told Bonnie when I said that, the dizziness, certainly if I tried talking about it, was horrendous. But even more than that, whether I was awake or I was sleeping, it was like replaying in my head. I say like a movie reel. That's always what came to my mind, almost like somebody was manually doing this thing over, and I can hear the tick, 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 tick of everything, and in a way that, I wanted to forget a lot of it, but so much of it was beautiful, and I didn't. So, like, my brain just couldn't do one or the other. So instead, it was almost like it just kept playing over and over and over. So I couldn't forget, and it was haunting. It was haunting. So whether I was awake and all of a sudden the moments would come back, or even sleeping, and I just had to get it out of my head. That is the strongest way I had to get it out of my head and put it in a safe place, is how I described it, a safe place. And Bonnie's writing was that safe place, and she was that safe person that was kind and compassionate and patient and
and you guys have known each other for a while too, and I feel like that may have helped too, having like a connection and kind of knowing each other on an emotional level.
Know how there is a chemistry between people. It's so funny because Bonnie and Bob, her husband, and Mark and I, though we knew each other, and Bonnie and I probably had more physical contact than say my Mark and Bonnie or my Mark and Bob, but in a small parish family as we were, and the school, there was exchanges and interactions certainly, but it was really kind of funny because Bonnie, I didn't have the opportunity to invest a lot of time with her as a girlfriend type of thing, but there was always this mm-hmm. unspoken kind of just wise knowledge that we just had something.
Mm-hmm. There was a synergy. Always.
And easy. Yeah. And she was someone I was drawn to as far as her strength and her confidence. She was a lector at church, and I loved it when you go up and she, I liked it, you know, because she spoke so well and carried herself well, and yet there was a very beautiful, soft side. And I, learning so much more about her now, it's like, well, now times 10, right? So, no, it's been, it's, she's
You're
the
very
gift.
Kind. Well, and plus, Nancy owned a women's workout
women's exercise. A wellness facility, an exercise
in Robinsdale,
facility.
Where Solana Hill was now. Amanda's.
Oh, funny.
Yeah. And so, but oh. it was called Figures. And so I knew her Figures, from there, too. I was part of that. But, I mean, Nancy's just a huge people gatherer. And, you know, she has many, 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 many women friends and just built a beautiful community as a result. And, of women who become friends,
women.
You know, as a result of, I mean, friends unto themselves, you know, women, different women that probably would have never met each other otherwise, met there, and then friendships blossom. Aww. But then she has the beauty of knowing all of them.
And that's so cool. And the gift of being able to know
gift.
Them all.
Yeah.
So, and it is about having a collection of people that you learn from, and I love different opinions, different lifestyles, all of that was good. The facility, when those doors opened, what we knew, because I opened it with a friend of mine, Kim, who's written in the, she's in the book a lot because she's been such a wonderful person in my life. We opened that facility as a wellness facility for women, but what was so funny is when we looked at that suite, when we looked in those windows, our priority was to have a gathering area for the women. It was never going to be one of these in and out and lose the opportunity of people to connect and bond. Mm-hmm. So we ended up having, we knew exactly where we'd have our gathering area with a counter and coffee and maybe snacks and whatnot, so people could be together. And we wanted it to be a beautiful feel and a beautiful atmosphere, because we realize that many, or I hate to say most, women don't have that retreat feel, the place to go that it wraps its arms around them when they walk in the door. They feel a sense of comfort and friendship and sharing and all of that. So true wellness is not, you know, it's not just fitness. Wellness is a beautiful, perfect blend of body, mind, and spirit, a full circle. And that's what we wanted to create there, and it happened. It just happened. And
well, and then too, that beautiful group of women was her support network for her family during the time when she was in Sayulita trying to find Mark. And so, I mean, it was, the house was packed over the always just packed, and there was people outside even, and the media came, and so it was 5 long days of a house full of people there for her children.
The village, and, I guess you'd say, and it ended up being a collection of all of the people that were there. We in the book described it as team Sayulita and Birdtown, team Sayulita, because we had these wonderful groups of people, small in Sayulita. My brother and sister-in-law flew in. They were the only additional. So it was the two of them, Kirk and Liz and myself. And then the snowbirds and the very, very instrumental people that they were so instrumental in all of what happened in Sayulita. But we had team Sayulita, and then we had team Birdtown, and Birdtown meaning both the church community, the city community. I've been a commissioner for the city for years and the Chamber of Commerce, so really dug into the community, and it came back tenfold in regards to offering that safe, secure warmth that was necessary to hold my family together. And
That's amazing.
They, I mean, the idea of what a community did, right?
And you helped build that.
I certainly have been a part of it and proud to be a part of it. And as I say, really dig in. And it's been a great place to be, and I love it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so great. Now I want to ask you, Bonnie, about your background in writing.
Well, I've always enjoyed writing from a very young girl, just writing poetry slash could be song lyrics, and I'm not published except for now.
Mm-hmm. So before and this, so, you were never?
No, I
dry mouth. Okay. So before this, you were not published.
No, and but I've just enjoyed it so much, and I have a huge filing cabinet at home with all sorts of writings, and you know, so they're waiting to come out someday, and I actually did start before I hooked up with Nancy. I have a fictional manuscript in the process, and so. Kind of a coming of age type of a thing, loosely based on my life. I have to be careful of names. So I have to fictionalize it.
How do you manage that?
I have to fictionalize it.
That's maybe, funny.
Maybe right under a pseudonym, you know, pseudonym. But no, and so then I just, when Nancy and I met up though, and when she said, I don't know how to write, mm-hmm. I didn't say, I'm a writer. I said, I like to write.
Yeah.
I'll write it with you.
I'll write it for you. Yep.
And so what we did, though, that for the very first time we met the first time was only like 45 minutes.
Yes.
And so then I went back and wrote, from the recording, I wrote a little piece. And I wanted her to see if she liked it, first of all. Because why, you know, continue if she didn't like my writing and what I was doing with her story. And she did, and the rest is history, and we just kept going and going and going. And COVID was, in that regard, a blessing because there was nowhere to go, nothing to do. And so I wrote. I worked full-time. And so after I was off work at 4:30, I would start at about 4:45 and write till about 9.
Wow.
Monday through Friday. Well, Monday through Thursday. I gave myself Friday.
Right.
And then all day Saturday, all day Sunday. I treated it like a full-time job, 8 hours each. And so it was, and then every time after that writing, then Nancy and I would meet again via a recording, and she would read what I wrote, and she would say, yes, no, I like what you did here, but I wouldn't say that word, let's use this instead. And so that's where it was truly a co-authorship, and a lot of what we had the different inks. So her ink, whenever we were writing, was I could actually take her verbatims, mm-hmm. and that was the purple ink. And then if I had to, we call it massaging some of her words and adding, you know, some visuals and that kind of thing, then my words were green. And then when she said, yeah, let's, you know, put them together. So then we put them together. They became orange. And then we read it again. I mean, we were reading and reading and reading and rewriting and rewriting. And so then when the ink finally went to black, we're like, yes. So it was,
Well, and much of it too, which you didn't mention is, yes, COVID. Well, COVID, plus, I travel to Florida all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't know, of the 90 hours, how much of it was you and I physically in the same room. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, I'll say at least half was on a speakerphone.
Mm-hmm.
Whether I'm at my house, Bonnie's at hers, or Bonnie's at her house and I'm in Florida. And we'd have our time scheduled, and I'd step away from whatever's going on, and I'd go to a room, and it'd be speakerphone, and we did the same if we were apart as if we were together, and that too ended up being real. I mean, oh my goodness, some of the times you talk about being transported back into the heat of the moment, and sometimes I can't even talk, and I'm done. I'm like, and then sometimes if it was, you know, one moment after another, and I'm not able to speak because I can't breathe because I'm crying, and sometimes it would be, you know what, we just have to stop right now, because that then I'd end up having a headache, and because it's just so, man, it's so bad and so emotional, yet so wonderful that I'm able to be back there because I needed to be back there to feel it. And she was able to take that and put it in the book. People that have read it, they're like, we felt it. We could smell what you described. We could see it. We could you know, all of the senses were brought into play, and so humble as you are, it takes talent, and people, most people are that are avid readers can't believe that this is your first. They can't believe that you haven't done that before.
Because she's a secret writer.
Secret writer.
Don't hide it anymore.
Yeah.
We want more of you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
so you. And what a gift it was to have her with me and through all of it. And if I had to relive it, I don't know who I would have wanted to relive it with other than you. My children still, they haven't read it. They have dabbled a little bit, but it's...
Do you think it's hard for them?
Oh, I know it is. Yeah. They weren't in Sayulita. So guess what? My children, much of that book is going to be a first time for them, mm-hmm. because we haven't in 9 years sat down and said, okay, kids, let's sit and I'm going to tell you the whole story. That's never happened. Mm-hmm. And because they, certainly through the years so far, they just probably also didn't feel like they needed to know or simply could deal with it. Mm-hmm. And they all intend on reading it. And they've, you know, opened it and begun it. It's kind of a powerful start.
Yeah,
my boys are like, my Lucas is really who leads us. It's interesting, too, how the story leads with my son Lucas and ends with my son Jacob. Mm-hmm. And Samantha is infused in the story because she was the most I was involved with throughout those 5 days. But, yeah, with those first few paragraphs, it's kind of like, they can't go any further, at least at this point. But they're grateful that it's written. Mm-hmm. They know it's important. They knew it was important to get it out of my head, certainly. Mm-hmm. And they were in full support of all of it to be written. And yeah, they want to read it, but they haven't. And the pain, yeah, and sometimes I have to tell you, and this might sound bizarre, but I'm going to say to the world, I'm going to do it without crying, but... Those 5 days, you couldn't feel pain because I had a job to do and I had to shut down. And your emotions just, they literally get shut down. It's just like a switch, boom. And it wasn't until finally the time to be able to start telling again. There are emotions and there's pain that I felt writing this book that I never felt in the years before. So in regards to healing, I didn't quite realize I needed to heal that much. And I didn't want to feel like that. I didn't want to feel like that because I didn't know how much it would hurt. But so gosh, I can only imagine why my kids would be hesitant to reading it because they finally, they're at a point where they, I think, feel the word normal. Yeah, no, there's no normal. It's all the idea of trying to accept a new normal and a new experience with everything. I said a cup of coffee doesn't taste the same anymore. I mean, it's as simple as that when you talk about life and living and you wake up every morning and... An example is to go get that cup of coffee and the way the sun comes in your house and how it feels when it hits your face. And from that point on, for the rest of your life, the coffee, the sound of the coffee being made, the taste of the coffee and the sun on your face in the same room that you've been for all those years will never, never taste the same, never feel the same. And that, so if I were the children, my kids, I'd probably be a little bit afraid, mm-hmm. I think, because you just don't know what's going to come out and what they're going to feel. And, and yet, we have the beautiful silver lining, the legacy of my husband, lives being saved, hundreds and hundreds on that beach every single year. And it's not going to end.
Yeah.
And part of this book and writing the book, a portion of the proceeds from the book and the sale of the book were going to be funneling to Sayulita, Pro Sayulita, to make sure that those lifeguard towers are always there and the volunteer lifeguards will always, you know, have the assistance they need to be able to continue. So,
yeah. And now there were people who have, before your husband, they probably have gone missing or like been taken by undertows as well.
Oh yeah, well I mean, and there's the ones that have been made it back. As I said, there hadn't been. What ended up happening for years is, since there was no lifeguards and they just weren't able to get that going, the resources going, the regular locals, if they happen to be on the beach and if they happen to hear screaming or yelling, that would be the most of the saving, I guess, or helping. And what's sad about that too is that in talking to them, the locals, many of them, if they're going to sit and just be relaxing, they don't even want to be on the beach because of that underlying anxiety and fear that, you know, it's somebody on almost every given day is going to be at least in distress to some degree. But yes, people had died before, Mark, on the actual lifeguard tower that was dedicated on the 5-year anniversary of my Mark. There are 3 names on there, 2 other men that had passed before Mark. Now, those are just the ones that were...
they drowned and were found, right?
Yeah, but there are locals that have drowned there. As a matter of fact, after all of this went down and, you know, Mark has died now and we're traveling back to the airport to fly back home to be with the family, the driver of the actual... not Uber or whatever it was, cab driver from Sayulita back to Puerto Vallarta. We get in the vehicle and, you know, you make light conversation. He spoke English quite well. Come to find out that he has lived in Sayulita all of his life and his best friend / cousin drowned in the water. That was a, you know, born surfer, whatever, and I forget how old he was. And so he had his story right there. And,
wow. And
you know that those stories aren't heard anywhere. I mean, they just happen. And then you ask yourself, well, how many other things happen that the community isn't so involved in, and the deaths happen and it never gets exposure, I guess.
Interesting.
Again, the unique...
Why do they even have that beach open anymore?
Well, it always will be open. And there's people that I know that travel there all the time still, and they always will. The unfortunate thing is that it's not, there was never flags, there was no kind of warning whatsoever.
Sure.
And so that's, you know, if we would have known,
mm-hmm.
if we would have known, right? And they don't do that, they don't post it because it scares people away. It's
mm-hmm.
it's a tourist place. So if people know that the waters are that dangerous, are you going to go there? Well, no, you're not. But if you want to surf... And, you know, that's your primary. You need to go to waters that are going to be aggressive water to be able to have waves.
Yeah.
And that and without the rip tides and rips are tied into that kind of chaotic water. So maybe some people do know what can be. But my goodness, when you see children on that beach mm-hmm. going in the water and the rip there moves from hour to hour. So it's not like go to the safe part. Because you don't know. So, yeah.
But it wasn't the rip that took them out. I mean, you can, if you,
right.
It was the violent, just rogue wave that came literally out of nowhere. Nancy said the waters were perfect for body surfing.
Yes.
And so what happened that came behind him and took him out, the rip took him out.
Well, it moved him.
It just moved him a little bit.
Yeah.
And you can swim out of a rip.
You can swim parallel
to the beach. Because they're only maybe 30 feet wide at the most, so you can get up. That's not what took
him out. No. The rip put him in a vulnerable position.
Yeah.
It was really just, again, it was a nanosecond where, you know, he's all good, and all of a sudden he's moved, say, 50 feet away. And I'm like, and I'm looking at him, and Liz and I, at that point, when he shifted, it was just like, whoosh, and all of a sudden he's there. I stood up and I looked at him, yelled at Kirk, and I'm like, you know, look at Mark. And Kirk yells, the nickname, it's in the book, Old Sack, you know, get your ass in here. And Mark gave it an acknowledged wave, but I could tell that I don't think he was even touching. So it almost moved him into a, like a little hole, deep area. And it was then that the first wave hit. And it wasn't just a wave, it was the mother of waves, and then it wasn't one, it was 3, and but rogue waves happen, I mean, all the time. People yeah. don't understand. People have been washed out to sea walking the beach, just a lovely morning walk or evening walk, and out of nowhere a wave comes and has swept people out
yeah.
to sea, and people have died, and that's in the country, out of the country. Remember, the biggest thing here, mm-hmm. once you get on that plane and you leave the safety of the United States, where a 911 call is going to bring in every kind of rescue option possible, as immediate as they can get there. And it happens, and happens quick, to leaving the safety of the United States and being in another country, any other country. And we go there naive and assuming that in case of an emergency, we'll have that kind of reaction. And that yeah. is, that's another takeaway. It's, again, we have to be prepared when we leave our country to know that that it's not anyone's fault. Mm-hmm. It just simply isn't available in most cases. And we all think it's so sexy and cool to go away and go to this abandoned, this island, this place. Yeah. You're all alone. It's also, ooh. And I'm like, yeah. Nowadays, I'm like, okay, but people, what do you do in case of, what are you going to do in case of an emergency?
Right.
And
it's
that
not
could,
glamorous all the time.
Well, not at all. Mm-hmm. Not at all. And there typically just aren't resources.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I do say that too, like with being just like a woman, you see all these, like, you know, Instagram or social media where it's like, oh, I'm in paradise and all this, and I'm enjoying my cocktail, but it's like, are you secure? Are you alone? Are you mm-hmm. at these Airbnbs where people you don't know, you don't know
totally.
What happens?
Yes,
true.
And like, you hear stories about mm-hmm. women who like go, like, I'm thinking one in particular, like, stayed at an Airbnb, is like, oh, I'm gonna stay a day later, and the people who own the Airbnb just like kidnapped her, and her mm-hmm. last text to her family was like, oh, it's raining, a little spooky, and then she's gone.
They've oh my been, gosh
they found her buried outside the front of the Airbnb when they came and investigated
right.
to find her. And it's just like, not to scare people, but like, you have to think of that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, how are you protecting yourself? You don't know anything about the country or anything, or just stuff like that. Like, always
Absolutely.
Know what you're getting into sometimes.
It's right.
Well, and it's simple as having a phone number. So if you are leaving the country, make sure you have on hand the phone number for the consulate and the embassy. That's important, or even location. I mean, mm-hmm. just because mm-hmm. we go, bad things happen more often than you think. Mm-hmm. If it's out of the country, well, let's put it this way. If I wouldn't have made the call to the media, guess what? Nobody would have known.
Right.
I mean, we never would have gotten the exposure. I had I had connections, and that was a good thing for me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't have those connections. They can't make that one call and all of a sudden get that kind of support.
Yeah.
But there are simple steps that you should take if you're leaving the country, or even if you're in the country, for gosh sakes, going to resorts, there's probably very remote places within the United States. Well, know your surroundings, know where
yeah.
you're going.
Yep.
Don't just make that naive assumption that you'll have a response if you need a response.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I sit and think of, oh my goodness, I mean, what are the numbers of people that travel out of the country and bring their children and never think for a second, not for once, they just assume. They leave them at the little daycare places
yeah.
or, I mean, all they go in the water and they
yeah.
just think
There's
that it's
so
all,
many things.
Well, if something happens, we'll just call the, oh, I'm sorry, there aren't any lifeguards and isn't anybody and there's...
Yeah, it's not the same.
No,
yeah.
no, not at all. Not at all. And even if Mark died instantly, if it was in our country, in the United States, we would have recovered him that same day that
yeah.
he would have been recovered. And that in itself, you know, the end is the end. It's the same. But the 5 days of not knowing was terrible.
Yeah.
Just terrible.
That is. And I'm so sorry that you had to go through that.
Yeah.
But
and it's not like anyone found him. It's not like a search was out there happening.
No.
And they
no.
found him. He surfaced.
Yeah. Mark had stayed. They believe yeah. he was underwater until that fifth day. So, yes, he... So we ended up... I ended up needing to hire... so many cool things in the story. It's like crazy. A search and rescue, an international search and rescue man, was a gentleman, was in Puerto Vallarta when Mark went missing. And he was vacationing there, from what I understand. His name was David. And because of the media coverage, because I screamed loud, let's say. Mm-hmm. It ended up being in the paper, the Puerto Vallarta paper, newspaper, and he's reading the paper and sees that there's a man missing in Sayulita. And he took it upon himself to find us, get in a car and drive
Which
to Sayulita, an hour drive, and get to the village and ask everybody, anybody, where is she staying? Because nobody would have known. And he came walking down this dirt road, and this person we don't know, and he introduced himself. He said what he does. It's his life. We're all over the world for fires, for water, all of that, in search and rescue. And has ties to the NOAA organization, and volunteered his services to put a plane in the air for us, because nobody would put a plane in the air. And he offered, and he said the only expense would be the cost of the rent of the plane and the gas, which that's no big deal. But what good is your money if you can't get somebody in the air, right?
Right.
So I luckily had money, some cash, and we're kind of like, now I'm like, well, I didn't know him for beans, and now we give him money, and now you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nobody, it's not like anybody in Sayulita knew him, because he didn't live there, he was just visiting Puerto Vallarta. So now it's like, here we go, cash, yeah, you go ahead and go get a plane, right?
Yeah.
I don't remember anybody checking him out, his story, but we made arrangements, and we were advised by the embassy not to put a plane in the air, and we disregarded that. And on the Saturday, so he went missing on Tuesday, it was on Saturday, David got the plane and put it in the air, and had a tie with the NOAA, so he NOAA organization, so he was able to have a pretty good idea as to where, if he is surfaced, where he'll be. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being on that day, on that Saturday, I forget how many hundreds of miles, what he did. It was crazy, and he came back, and he did not find Mark. He, you know, whether he hadn't surfaced or maybe he was washed ashore somewhere. But the next day, when the fishermen accidentally found Mark, because then he had surfaced, it ends up being that is where our plane was over the exact spot where he was. So that was part of our path. And so that told us that Mark hadn't surfaced. Otherwise, we would have seen him on
right.
Saturday.
Right.
And so, yeah. Anyway. So,
wow.
Yeah, lots of crazy, bizarre things with people that entered into my life at that point, and even back home. Heroes.
Yeah. And I know we're giving away pretty much the whole book.
I know, I feel like we are.
But there's a reason why he didn't surface. I think that's important.
Yes.
Too.
My mark was very, very strong and very lean. 6'5", 220, probably sits at about 8 or 9% lean, and beautiful, just beautiful man. And he also had titanium. He had had a knee replacement. So having no body fat is buoyant. So having little to no body fat, plus having hardware in his body, brought him down and kept him down.
Yeah.
And he stayed on the bottom until, and I believe it is said that no matter how lean or whatever, by about the fifth day, no matter what, then typically any would surface. So it ends up being on that fifth day that he finally surfaced.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
Yeah. But again, the things that happened and kind of this can't really be happening. I mean, and that goes, these little tidbits, that's nothing compared to the story where, and then I'd be telling Bonnie, these 90 hours I'd be telling and talking. I'm like, oh my goodness, I totally forgot about this.
Yeah.
And so then I'd have to go back. I said, oh my gosh. So then I'd have to go back and kind of tell it again, and now with something that I completely forgot about the dog and about this and about that, and you know.
Yeah. And so that's, we're not going to keep telling the rest of the
story. No.
But what she had to deal with after he surfaced was horrendous.
Yeah.
With how she was treated or not treated by the locals. And I mean, that in and of itself is like, are you kidding me?
So I recommend maybe if somebody is really into traveling or like kind of new to traveling, maybe like read this book and know kind of what can happen or like what to, you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Like it is good to think about anywhere you go, even places in the U.S. sometimes.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's exactly like you say. It's about, it's a takeaway is a safety. The idea that it offers awareness, mm-hmm. awareness to anyone out there that is interested in traveling, yeah. or that they have. And many of the people, matter of fact, when we did the Minnesota Live, was Megan Newquist. That was it, Megan? Yeah. She said, oh, we travel out of the country all the time with the children. And it never has crossed our mind that we need to have a plan of action in case of an emergency.
Right.
We just go there and we just think it's all going to be taken yeah. care of based on the resort. We stay at nice places, you know.
Yeah.
And I get it, but she said it just never occurred to her. And, yeah. and moving forward, she herself said, we are going to have a plan of action in case of whatever it might be. And yeah, that's definitely a real key part yeah. of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the other was the idea of live life now, people.
Right. One, it's multi-purposeful, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, but it's a love story. It's a tragedy, but then it's about Nancy moving on.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a widow or a widower, anyone who's lost a loved one tragically,
yeah,
just to read how she has handled it mm-hmm. Over these last several years, mm-hmm. is amazing because, you know, she's very strong and...
You are really strong.
Yeah, yeah. And just to... People will be... They'll be surprised by her strength with... And then they'll be encouraged to
yeah.
say, okay, I can do this. She did it. She's doing
yeah.
fine. She's not... She's more than doing fine. She's doing very well. And the pain will always be there. Always, always, always. It'll never go away. So it's just moving on with him.
Yeah, not leaving him behind, keeping him with us all the time yeah. in our thoughts and our prayers and our conversation. How do you have someone in your life, you know, such an impactful person in your life for 26 years, and then all of a sudden be moving on with your life and not have him infused into everything? You know what
right.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There isn't much. And what's interesting is our society doesn't necessarily think that's an okay thing, because you will have the naysayers, you will have the people that somebody has passed, it's been 3 years, and you end up having conversation mm-hmm. and bring him up or them up, and they're like, you know, aren't you, you know, that's yeah, they look at you like you're not over it, like you haven't healed, like you haven't let it go. You know, you just need to kind of move on and let that go. Because it makes them feel uncomfortable.
Huh.
There was a woman that I met, and wonderful, wonderful person. And after Mark had died, I'm sure in just conversation, I probably brought him up because it just happens. And she said to me how she loved that, how he was, you know, still part of our conversation in life and all that. And it was very appropriate, however it was that I brought him up. And she went on to tell me a story about, about someone that their baby died.
Mm-hmm.
A newborn, didn't live very long and passed away, but it was certainly the child and love and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular person experienced exactly that. It was that she found that every time she'd bring up this baby, that her baby that had passed, it made other people feel uncomfortable. And they looked at her with almost pity, like, oh, that she obviously is not dealing with it well, and she just needs to get over it and move on, move forward, and, you know, let that lie. And so she stopped talking about her experience and this child of hers. She stopped talking about it because it made other people feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And so that's, she, I didn't know anything about that with her, because I would have liked to know if it, how mm-hmm. she dealt with her pain and all that. But society often, it's like out with the old and in with the new.
Wow.
And we have too often that type of an attitude, and that, we just need to forget.
Move on.
Or move on.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes people don't want to talk about it, and that's where you have to read that person, right?
Right.
I mean, if you ask how you're doing, and then they, and if you maybe, you know, inquire a little bit more deeply, you know, to give them the freedom to start expressing themselves, they still might not, but at least there's that opportunity, and I mean, there's but there's plenty of people that don't want to at all, and that's okay too.
The look. Oh my goodness, the look. Through those first few years, and even with Bonnie, at 6.5 years after Mark, on that day that you know, we decided you were going to write for me, it was the, Nancy, I walk over. You know, I think often the first few moments or seconds even, it's like they've forgotten. They kind of like, it doesn't, and then all of a sudden there's this change in their face when they see me, and then all of a sudden they remember, oh, that's right, her husband died. And they don't say it, but you can see it.
Yeah,
and you're looking at him, so it's, hey, and then it's like, oh, yeah, how are you?
But I think, but that's our human nature, though,
yes,
too.
Yes.
And it's, because, yeah, a lot of thoughts do go. It's like, well, how is she? I wonder how she is doing. Does she want to talk
How
about
are
it?
You?
Yeah.
And then it's, you know, how are you? How are you really?
Yeah.
You know? And, yeah. Yeah, that was, and that was a moment of honesty with you. I could have pacified you and say, you know what? Because actually, that was 6.5 years after Mark. I've already been involved in a new relationship. So it was at the 5-year mark that I actually accidentally came upon a man that I'm now in love with, and we've been together 4 years, who is about the best guy in the whole world in regards to keeping Mark also in our life and conversation
that's
all the time.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that's something too that is bizarre. What he is able to do in, wow.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Yeah. That's a lot. That's a lot to process in a lifetime.
It's a lot. It's a lot, but
and you said something to me. I wish I recorded it, but it was so inspiring. About because I said I like that. There's a silver lining now. There's like a lifeguard, and like in his in his memory, and a few other people. But I said, you know, sometimes good things come out of bad things, and you said not always.
Mm. Right, and exactly. Well, and it would be really nice if that happened, wouldn't it? If that we knew that any pain and sorrow and suffering that we have, it'll all be worthwhile because something good's going to come of it. Now, what I had said to you is that it might be as simple as maybe it's not that silver lining, good, feel, happy. But if you live through it, and you're still alive to talk about it, there was an opportunity for a lesson, for growth, for healing. Mm-hmm. And it's much more the question, what are you going to do with it? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we are not here to only be living with joy and happiness and warmth and all the warm and fuzzies all the time. That's not what it's about. Frankly, I'm a firm believer that who we are and the and what we become is not based on the ease of life presented. Mm-hmm. It is about the challenges that come your way.
Yeah.
And what are you going to do with that? How is that going to help mold you and I don't want to say harden you, but create that person that's going to move into the future. And it's in the book, but I got to tell you, a woman I knew that I love and adore saw me within that first year after Mark died, and in a store. It's one of those looks I talk about. You know, they look at you and they're ha, and then all of a sudden, oh, right? And so from afar, hey, I walk over, and almost immediately she's weeping. She's and looking at me and saying, why Mark? And she had known my Mark. And I don't know why the reaction was as quick or as strong as it was, but my response to her was, why not? Why not Mark? Why is it that we think good people, that why is it that people that live their life good and healthy and helpful and all of those good things, why is it that we would ever assume that those bad things aren't going to happen to us? Because we know bad things happen to good people also.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't question. Mm-hmm. I don't know of anyone that questions the goodness in our life. We don't wake up in the morning and say, you know, the sun's shining, it smells good, it's all good, all beautiful. Oh, but why me, God? You know, or higher, why me?
Yeah.
You know, we don't question that. We only question when pain and suffering comes our way. And I would be much more about, certainly count your blessings on those days, that is beautiful. But the idea that we only question the bad things, and I say, take it in, We don't have a choice, right? I mean, we should live through it and realize that that is part of life and living. And and if it doesn't hurt, and if it isn't this horrible loss with a person or people, then I don't think you are living, because you're not loving, you know, the way we, you know, love should be. And love is gonna feel good, but it's gonna hurt just as bad. So yeah, the why not, I think, is something we need to start asking ourselves a little bit more sometimes, because I think we live in a very privileged, just our country. You know, it's we're overwhelmed with all that good stuff, and so, you know, you get a sliver.
And I don't really know a lot of other cultures, so I can't speak on it, but just people that I've known in my life, like, a lot of people are looking for, like, that next high, that next feel good. Like, they think that life is about just all the good things. And I think, I don't believe that that's what life is about.
Well, and about surface good things too. You know what I mean? It's we live in such a superficial society. And instant gratification. All of those things that I think are not a good thing.
No,
and
it's not.
Yeah, digging deep down to find, you know, the good stuff, the how it makes you feel, and what you do for other people. I talk about, when it comes to wellness, my world was internalize the needs for wellness. In other words, it's you deal with from the inside out. And if you do that and do it properly for body, mind, spirit, all of that, and you go from digging and start on the inside, then the outside all takes care of itself. So nurture that, build that, create that, and exude that from your pores to other people. And this surface stuff that we put such importance on, it just, and so, with my mark, we weren't wealthy people. We were just average people that took the time we were given, the gift of time that we were given, and we made use of the best we could. And, it didn't involve having a lot of money. It was about time. And we all say it, it's cliche. We're not guaranteed the next breath. Know, I mean, it can, any, so it is what we're doing right now. And that was, and two, I remember after all of this went down, I remember thinking to myself, if I can just breathe through the next 5 years. For some reason, 5 years was, it wasn't a year, it wasn't going to be 2 years. And that my thought was, if I can live and breathe through these next 5 years, then that new normal, you know, that bringing Mark along with, but that new normal, you know, maybe then it can occur. But what a world we live in.
And it's very interesting too that it was 5 years, and then that's at the fifth year, that's when you found out too. I mean, you had no way of knowing.
It was the 4 year when
it
was a 4 year, but 4 year when we went back that we found out that things were happening, and then it was the 5 year was the dedication. But it was at the 5 year, right after the 5 year, that Jeff entered Jeff. You know, I mean, that's crazy too.
Right.
And would it be that somebody would say, somebody really tries to dissect all of this, well, maybe because when you said that in your mind, that you just need to live and breathe through 5 years, that all of a sudden I opened myself up and I put the ooze,
manifested
right. But I will tell you that an amazing woman, very, very, she's fantastic. She's a very well-known, I want to say psychic, I suppose, here in the cities. And I'm all a fan of it all. I don't go searching for that, but all a fan. But she's a friend. And it was a month before I met Jeff. So, again, that five-year anniversary. She had seen me many times. She was involved in my life when Mark went missing. She, you know, all of that. And she said to me, a month before I met my Mark, I was at a birthday party that she was at, and she looked at me. And I'm so just happy to see her and everything. She's like, "You're ready." She just looked at me and she said, "You're ready." And I'm like, "What?" You know, I mean, understand, I was not sitting back feeling sorry for myself for 5 years. The moment when Mark died, I'm like, "Okay, I got to breathe, got to move forward." I was traveling. That's it. I'm like, well, if I'm going to be doing this alone, by golly, I'm going to be traveling. I'm going to set some goals and travel. So I wasn't, you know, sitting and doing nothing. And all the people that said, oh, you know, when I met Jeff, you know, I'm so happy for you. You deserve to be happy. Well, I didn't. I wasn't looking for that.
Yeah.
I was pretty darn good with what was going on in here. But she looked at me and she said, you're ready. And she said, I think she used the word, you're right. I'm like, what?
You're right.
Right. Right. She said, yep. She said, and she, there was an aura. She said she could see. And she said, now she's like, they're going to come to me. I'm like, I don't want anybody to come to me. I am fine living my life and going into my, and dying exact, just like this, because I have my children, my friends, my community, my, I had it. I had more for 26 and a half years than I say most people ever and will ever have in their life.
Yeah.
Okay. Why would I want or need or expect anything more? I didn't need that.
Yeah.
I was ready to move forward. I was ready to continue this path, not alone, but with all. And I knew where my energies were going to be. So I don't know why the Lord dropped him in. And what a beautiful
addition. Because you are ripe.
Exactly.
<Yeah. laughs>
And the word it was just like, what?
I
did
love
you
that.
Do this? Yeah.
I love that so much. That is awesome.
Yeah.
Now, I have questions about the book.
Okay.
The name. How'd you come up with the name?
My husband, our name is Stoneberg, and he had been Stony for 40 years working for the power company and involved in many, many sports. So when I met him, I'm quite sure that was all I knew of. Stony was his name. I didn't know he had a name, Mark, when I first met him. So that was just always his name. And the decision, it was really kind of sweet. We were sitting and interviewing friends, Kim and Joe, husband and wife, that were Mark's, our best friends. And Joe came to the meeting, to the interview, because Kim was very involved when I was in Mexico with Mark missing, very involved with my home and my family and all of that, right?
Yeah.
And so we needed her side, her Team Birdtown side, what was going on at the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so Kim came to meet with Bonnie for this interview, this recording, and Joe came along, but Joe said, he's got this voice, but I'm not going to say anything. I just want to come and sit. Well, within probably the first 3 minutes, Joe infused, he was in, man. He was in and on and recorded, I think, as much as Kim, which was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It was therapy. Shall we talk about the idea that all of these interviews for the story, all of them, were therapy for all those people. They didn't even know they needed it.
I love that.
The
and
tears, the cries, there. The stories, they're all in there.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I get goose pimples when I think about that, because it ended up offering beauty and healing for all of them.
Yeah.
So they come and they speak and they tell their story, and it was wonderful, and tears and all of that. And then Joe, and he's bigger than life. He's just this wonderful, wonderful structure, human being. This low voice, and he stood up and, well, I don't know what you're going to call it, but I think it should be called Stony. Done.
Yeah.
I love
done.
That.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there it is, Stony.
Because we really didn't have a title.
No, I mean, we talked about different things.
Throwing different things around.
But that just said it.
Yeah.
And I like that people don't know.
Yeah.
The question.
I couldn't wait to ask because I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I was like, is it,
yeah. Yeah, well.
It's intriguing. A lot of people are like, oh, is it, what's that about? What's a stoner?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
I guess I didn't think of that at all. But
oh, really?
Yeah,
that,
I know.
Oh, because I've had people say
that. Sure.
Like, oh, was he a big pot?
No. Right. Absolutely
yes,
not.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I'll say that loud. That picture was taken. That picture didn't get developed until after Mark had died. So let's say.
Is this him?
That's him walking away. Towards the light. Is
wow.
that not crazy? Okay.
So I thought this was an illustration maybe that somebody did, because it kind of looks like a drawing that's been altered or like.
It does.
You know.
That is my Mark. And we were at an event for the Twin Cities Live show. I was doing a on-site thing, and it was at, it was a zombie run actually with us. In order to get from the parking lot to the area where the event was taking place, you had to walk through this big kind of a, not a mountain, but a big hill that had a giant PVC thing that you walked through, right? So it was a tunnel. And Mark got ahead of me, and I turn and I look, and he's ahead of me, and he must have been a little bit tweaked. His back must not have been real great, because that was one of his crooked days. So you can see he's a little crooked mm-hmm. and cockeyed, because he had a touch of scoliosis, and his back was usually a bit of an issue. So he was...
Tall people get those issues,
yes,
don't they?
Yes, they certainly can. And so he was walking ahead of me, and I just... It was one of those moments like, huh, and I snapped a picture. And it wasn't until after he died, and I was going through pictures I had, and I probably, it was in the pile of I just got developed, and I took it out. I'm like, oh my gosh. If that doesn't look like my Mark's walking towards the light, I don't know mm-hmm. what does. And I told
this
Bonnie.
Beautiful.
Right?
Yeah.
And I mean, all of it. You know, I mean, I say in the book, too, and again, it's not that it's a faith-driven book, but I'm sorry, my life, much of it is about faith. And
Where do you sell these books?
Amazon.
Do you ever do, like, anything in person, or have you done any event or anything?
Well, we have done one event mm-hmm. so far, but we published, and then things got a little chaotic for us for a while. So now what we're doing is we're able to regroup on our time, and we're going to dig it. Well, we've done shows. My gosh, we did Twin Cities Live. We did mm-hmm. Minnesota Live. We did CCX.
Local cable.
We did some newspaper work. So that has been just wonderful. Mm-hmm. But we haven't really...
There was
organized.
A women's expo that we went to a couple weeks ago. And so we're seeking out opportunities. But yes, with my move and everything, I mean, just things got kind
busy.
But we're going to, because, you know, we're self-published, which is a beautiful thing that Amazon offers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You basically, they provide a platform where you have a manuscript and you follow their guidelines with, you know, making sure everything is... margins are correct and everything, because you have to make room for the folding of the book and so on and so forth. And so they provide this beautiful platform where you upload your manuscript, and then they make it available on their site as an ebook and paperback. Hardcover would be, I'm not sure, we'd have to pay, but I don't see a need for a hardcover. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, if there's an audiobook, which many of my friends say, well, when is it going to be an audiobook? Well, that, you know, what that's going to take is her reading it.
Mm-hmm.
That, and so we need a studio.
There you go.
Hi.
Hello.
You can come in here and do that.
You know?
Yeah.
Just thought about that.
Yeah, you can come in here.
And there's a women's magazine called Women's Circle Magazine, which is a brand new venture that started in 2021 by three women in Texas. And a friend of ours is working with them. And they're planning to feature us in their magazine.
Ooh, cool.
So there's things that are...
That's
it's a wonderful...
It's I love
wonderful.
That.
Yeah.
Now... Do you ever plan on doing, like, more books?
Well, we talked about it.
Stories, but...
Well, yeah. Other people have approached me separately and said, you know, would you consider writing my book? Nancy has had other people say that, too. We've also talked about, you know, she's talked about The Widow's Walk, that it might be
Could you handle that emotionally?
Well, a lot of it's me.
Yeah, you.
Well, believe me, I've cried so many times, even when we both have. And even so many of the same times, same things that we're reading over and over and over again, it always brings me to tears. I can never not, you know, but I mean, no, I don't have a problem digging deep. I'm pretty deep.
Yeah,
and so
I'm sure.
A lot of people tell me I'm a little too deep. It's like, okay, back it up a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think I ever said that. No,
you can't be too deep.
Well, just with the even certain just people. In the writing,
I think wise.
Yeah,
you're very wise.
And I'm going to tell you, from what I read of this, I'm a very sensitive person, and it's hard for me because I know the storyline. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's somewhat, and I'm just it's hard emotionally to read it, but it's also I think it's great.
And yeah. That is what a lot of people have said. Mm-hmm. It's like they know what's coming and they yeah. don't want to go there. But then again, there's beauty in the ashes. And that's why we think it's very important in the title itself that there is the silver lining. Then there's hope. And so, it's not an easy read, but there's a lot of people that have received healing just in their own lives, again.
Well, and what a gift all of it is. Okay, so none of us are getting out of this alive, mm-mm. right? Mm-mm. We can all agree on that one, right? Yep. So if, in fact, we had the opportunity and ability to choose how we do pass, you know, you sit and think, you know, if I could, what would I do? Well, imagine one of those options be, well, yeah, you're gonna die, and because you die, hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands, of people and lives, children, adults, are going to be saved from this point on. Let's see that, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my Mark, if there was a whisper in his ear when that wave hit, and if that whisper said to him, look, you've had a good life. Man, you two have done it. You really did it, and you're in a happy place right now. You got one of two choices. You can get through this right now. Okay, you might get hurt, but you're gonna get through it, and you get to go back to your wife and your life and all that, right? Or, but I'm not gonna guarantee you any years. I'm just gonna say right now, you're gonna get out of this event right now, okay? You can have that. Or you can give it up. And this is what's going to happen if you do. And I'm pretty sure my Mark would be like, you know what? That old age thing is probably overrated. and guaranteed to be able to have happen what's happening.
Yeah.
That would have been him. He would have said, they'll do fine. So.
Yeah, well, he died doing what he loved. And
how many
people can say that, too?
Yeah.
And then also, I mean, lives are being saved. We haven't really talked about Pro Sayulita down in Sayulita. They're the volunteer firefighters,
right.
and they do other things down there. And literally, I mean, you can go on their website and see there's testimonies all the time about how many lives are being saved.
Wow. In a season.
Ugh. And Nancy, she gets, texts and emails all the time from Janice down there. And it's because of the towers now.
Yes.
And they are training new lifeguards all the time, locals.
Wow.
So,
That's great.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Well, and his name is actually on the, with the other two, I think maybe you said.
Oh, yeah. He's on the lifeguard tower. His name, the dedication is there.
And because of you being as strong as you are and having the connections, you are also a part of that and getting that.
Yes. Well, yes. I mean, yeah. Yeah. But the really key person there is a friend of ours, Janice Parker, who is actually from Canada. So she's a snowbird that goes there, but she is an advocate. She's actually one of, I think, the original people that created an organization. Imagine this. You go away, you leave your country, go to Mexico, and you love the community so much, but see the need for change and improvement, that you organize and get an organization going within that community. You go there for your vacation. You're retired. You go. That's your winter place, right? And you can't help yourself but to get something together and get a group of people that has now evolved and become this beautiful organization called Pro Sayulita that has its... that's the under the umbrella is things for the lifeguard. It's things for the community, for the children. It's things for the animals of Sayulita. I mean, it's right. I mean, so under this umbrella are all these beautiful things happening, because they're such good people that they know that this particular village, this community, needed some help and some guidance, and to be able to now be, intertwined with them, with people like that, it's just. Yeah, that's a pretty wonderful thing, too.
That is wonderful. That's awesome. Do you recommend going to visit there?
Other people? Yes, I would say absolutely. But there's no one I'm going to say to go there and go in the water. I don't care if there's lifeguards. Yeah. I'm just, get a place with a pool. I know that sounds terrible, but my people, when we go there, and we've been there many times now in the 9 years, everyone knows. I don't even want to toe in the water. I think that's, you know, there's one area, they call it the sandbar area, and that's where they consider that the safest area of the beach, the south side. And I don't know that there's been any tragedies down on that end. Okay, mm-hmm. so maybe there hasn't, and maybe that is exactly where you want to be. So I guess I shouldn't say that, but my people, no, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I ask that if you come with me and travel with me, you don't go in the water there.
Yeah. And I think it is too true that if anyone is traveling, to do your research, figure out where you're going, what's going on. Yeah, don't just go in blind. So, yeah.
Right, and naive.
And naive, yeah.
Well, you love the village.
Sayulita itself is an experience. I think that everyone should travel there and be there and spend time there. It's the culture, the beauty and the raw beauty of it, and I mean it's just yummy.
Yeah.
And the moment we got there, and Mark and I have traveled many places in Mexico and Jamaica, I mean all over, and there was something about that village the moment we got there, and driving on the cobblestone, because before it wasn't paved roads or anything, and everything that he said and felt and was talking about the moment he got there, it was something, he talked in a way he never had ever before in any of the travels. There was something super special and beautiful about that place that, and then talking about he wanted to, you know, bring the kids there, and they just have to see this because it was the most authentic, rustic, real experience. And he wanted to bring them there so bad. And this is only we're only 3 days into it. We haven't even really dined out much. I mean, not much. We were surfing and tired and this and that. So from Saturday till we lost him on Tuesday. So the little bit of time that Mark had, he fell in love with it. And
even slept well.
Slept well, wow. Which again is all, it's in the book. But bizarre things like that. You're just like, it was...
It just almost makes you feel like there's something more than us out there.
Yeah. You know? Oh, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. And then that first year after Mark died, when I presented the idea, the thought of the children, do you want to go? I mean, is it important for you to go? Do you want to go and see where your father was? Because they had never been there.
Yeah.
And they absolutely said yes, without hesitation. Well, we stayed in Nuevo Vallarta, which again is 45 minutes from Sayulita. We stayed there, but then the group of 15 or 20, we traveled to Sayulita for the day to be on the beach at 5:15 when Dad went into the water, and we stayed there until the sun was setting at 7:15. So we would be there that first year anniversary where their father was, and they were taken. Everybody that went into Sayulita, they were just jaws dropped, like the, again, raw, natural beauty, genuine Mexican, everything was just crazy amazing.
Wow.
So no regrets. And then we had went back a few times after. We actually stayed in Sayulita twice, on the right, we're actually literally in almost in the same darn bungalows, twice within those years with the children and the family.
Wow.
So it was important.
That is cool.
And they could feel it. Mm-hmm. People say, why did you go back for me? And they're like, isn't it just a terrible thought and, you know, all the ugliness? And I said, I didn't know what it was going to feel like till I got there. And when I got there, it was special.
Mm-hmm.
I could feel him there. I could I could sense him there. It was exactly what I needed. And if it would have been ugly, it would have been a one and done, right? Yeah. Never went back.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that way at all.
That's
it was
beautiful.
All beautiful, the days we had, so...
Wow, that's so cool.
And there's so many photos in the book, too, that capture before
and
after. Yeah. And just your family photos. And
just how we ended up.
I did like seeing those.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Even how we ended up in Sayulita, the idea that ends up, you know, we're invited to go to a place that with a friend that he's never invited anybody to go to. I mean, even just that invitation of going and, you know, that it's, yeah, all great stuff. And a silver lining.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome that you guys work together and make this happen. And you helped heal a lot of people, not just you.
Right, right.
Yeah. Do you guys, I feel like this brought you a lot closer. Are you guys really
Bonnie, me and Bonnie?
Yeah.
Oh, heck yeah.
There's just a synergy that we have. It's just, it's easy.
It was, and easy and natural. And we just on, almost could finish each other's sentences, I think, in many ways. Really kind of crazy like that. More like a sister connection than a friend connection. And we didn't have to work at it at all.
Yeah.
That's so great.
It's really nice.
I love that. And you even said, I don't think I recorded this, but you tried to work with other people.
And it just wasn't right. Mm-hmm. Kind of like even with personal training. I mean, I've been doing that for 34 years. Mm-hmm. I'll have an interview with someone before, and we will consult and talk. And my time is worth a lot to me, and I don't mean money. I mean, I value my time.
Yeah.
And if there isn't a connection, especially something, and I say intimate, meaning in training and one-on-one, that's our, you know, with that person and their energy and their all of that. And I'm like, if it doesn't feel right, if it doesn't fit, I'm like, I'll send them somewhere else, because I am not going to take an hour of my time to be with something that doesn't feel right.
Right.
Yeah. So, and there was Bonnie was a right fit, and
that's I still
can't believe it.
That's awesome. Well, thank you guys for coming and talking about this. Mm-hmm. This is so great.
Thank you.
Yes, this has been a privilege.
Oh,
thank
so
you.
Fun.
Yeah. You're amazing.
You guys are amazing.
You with your bright blue eyes and smiling face. And,
right.
You're making me blush. This isn't about me.
Well, we appreciate that you saw value in the story.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And sharing the story. That's very important. And, I think it's a wonderful, beautiful read. And for people that can't get over the fact that it's about death, well, life and living is about death, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't have one without the other. And, again, what are you going to do with it?
Right. Right.
So, amen.
And that is, it's, I think that is such a, like, I love when you say that, because it's like, when bad things happen, it's now you as a person's responsibility to do something with that and change it into something, a lesson or whatever you do with it. So, I think that's really important for people to know.
Right.
Yeah.
But awesome. All right. I brought you some food.
Yay. All right.
I see shrimp.
I know. So I know it was your favorite food, right, Nancy? I think
was it mine?
Well, I think I might
she might have done that.
Too.
I think
someone said shrimp and someone said crab legs.
And then I think
you said crab.
And there was stir fry in there too. But but shrimp.
I think those are the two I went with. I know it was a while that I asked you, because it's hard to like pick a favorite. But I brought shrimp. I was gonna bring both, but
she's a was gonna girl. I know about them.
I was gonna
I was gonna get gas. That's what he called me, a was gonna girl, because I always have it on empty. I was gonna get gas.
I know, right?
I was gonna get gas. That's a whole story right there.
So tell me about shrimp, and we can say crab legs too. What do you think about that? Yeah, we can get crunchy. Let's get into it. What do you guys like? Because this is a food based as well podcast.
Yeah.
So, Tell me about your food favorites.
Well, for me, shrimp, it's so filling. Mm-hmm. It's so good for you. It's easy to eat. Mm-hmm. I like it. I don't like anything fried. I just can't do fried anything. But
I don't like fried either, yeah.
Fresh. And so that's it for me.
Yeah.
It's
so great. Everyone eats it.
Yes.
Nally eats it.
So
birds eat it. Fish eat it. We eat it.
On shrimp for me, grew up, I don't know about you, but I'm telling you, shrimp didn't enter our house in Grand Forks, North Dakota, like ever, because we couldn't afford it. It was never part of any of our mainstay. And I remember going on, I remember where it was, probably a trip with Mark when I'm probably 19 years old, I don't know, but I'm somewhere and there's all you can eat shrimp. Peeling shrimp. I'm like, I didn't know something I thought even existed. And who could possibly afford something? And I remember sitting and eating peeling and shrimp until I couldn't eat it anymore. It's this to me still, that mindset, lobster and shrimp, it's such a luxury.
Mm-hmm.
Though I do eat it often now, it's just such a decadent luxury in what you can do with it and all the yum-yums you can, you know.
Yeah.
I actually do it, one of my big things with shrimp that I did, and here's my little thing. And even people that are chefs, own restaurants, they've been in my house and they think it's amazing, is I'll take shrimp, raw shrimp, butterfly it, make sure it's veined and whatnot. And I did this in Mexico where you can buy pounds of it for like nothing, right? In Sayulita.
Yes.
So I went to the market, bought it, butterfly it, devein it, and just brush it with olive oil. Then have charcoal. I'm all about charcoal. And it's just a very quick, you know, so the gray turns pink. Don't overcook it. And it's got to be raw. And it's just, you know, and then so... just a few seconds on each side, then on the center, butterfly. Then I always have a collection of fresh garlic, of course, with butter. So melted butter, but with fresh garlic, some garlic salt, and there's a roasted garlic seasoning I put in it. I make sure it's really... And then all I do is I serve it then on this platter in this beautiful pool of this garlic butter, and people go pretty crazy over it. And
that sounds
it's
so
just
good.
Does.
So it's like a scampi, but for some reason, because of the grill element and the charcoal element, that just that little bit of the brush with olive oil and searing, and oh man. Mm-hmm. So I've done that for people that are, you know, like some restaurant people and foodies and whatnot, and they just love it.
I mean, you're more than welcome.
She's
yeah. So you're more than welcome to make that for us sometime. Just saying.
She's
I like to entertain.
Cook.
I love to host.
She does.
Yes, yes. My home is happiest when it is bursting at the seams with people, and anyone that knows me knows that is it.
I love that.
And if those wolves could talk, and that is the only home I've been in with Mark. 36 years, that was our wedding house. We closed on it in August, got married in October, and I moved in, and I've been there since. So.
Wow. And that's in Robbinsdale.
It's in Robbinsdale.
Well, if you have any... Yeah. Get together.
Oh, no, absolutely. We can have a mixer there if you want. It'd be,
oh, my gosh, that would be kind of fun.
Oh,
a backyard mixer.
Oh, yeah.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, her backyard, something. Oh, my gosh, it's a haven. It's.
Oh, my gosh.
She's a woman of many talents and tastes.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I'm in the presence of amazing, creative women. And it's so great.
It's pretty
so
full.
Nice.
It's full of it in here, all three of us. I'm telling you. We've got a lot
this.
Of something in here.
Oh, Nally, too. She's a female.
Oh, yes.
She's a dog. She
and
just brings
can,
good vibes.
Well,
yes,
I can,
exactly.
I can
oh
hear
gosh,
her breathing.
Oh,
I know.
She's a snorer.
Yeah. No, well, that's adorable. Reminds me of our chaser that we just lost. So
Yeah. I was thinking the same. And I don't know. Well, did you note the point in time where she came up on the couch?
It was, yep, I did. I obviously didn't want to interrupt, but she's very, very sensitive.
When
and
you were
your,
in tears and telling your story,
she
came
oh,
and
wow.
looked. She looked right at you.
Yep.
I think if she could have, she couldn't make it through.
Yep, she was
so
trying to.
So she came
to.
Over here.
Yep.
And she was, when she came up here, she was looking at you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
The reason, not only is that special in and of itself, it's special because... of I don't know if we want to talk about it. It's in the book about a dog.
Oh.
I mean, we're giving the whole book away.
I don't know that part.
The God dog?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe, I don't, maybe you can tell me after a recording, unless you want,
Well, it's just, first of all, just to give a heads up.
I have goosebumps. Right
this story, if you think this God dog is something, wait till you read the story and understand. And all of these things are witnessed. It's not like some made up. This is all... the God dog. On the day that Mark went away, I told you the boys went down, they were going to another beach to get to try and get up on the board. So the two gentlemen, the men walked away, they get down to the surf school. And while they're sitting and waiting for the shuttle to take them to another beach, there's loose dogs in Sayulita. You know, as a matter of fact, that's one of the programs in the Pro Sayulita to help with adopt a dog, right?
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of stray dogs. Some are really nice and happy, and some aren't so much. Kind of cranky and you know. So Mark is sitting and waiting for the shuttle with Kirk, and this dog comes and picks him out of the crowd, and the sides to come up and warm up to him, and he's leaning on him and just nuzzling up with Mark, and Mark's petting this dog, and the workers, who are many of them Spanish speaking only, and they got their conversation going on and pointing and Kirk's like, what's all the hubbub? And these men say, the one that could speak English told them that dog doesn't like anybody. Wow. That dog is kind of the mean one, kind of the crabby one. It doesn't come and certainly doesn't let you pet it. And mm-hmm. it's sitting there nuzzled up. Well, my Mark, you know, pumped up, big old peacock, you know, shoulders tall. And he looked, he says, well, you know what dog means is backwards, is God,
whoa,
G-O-D.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, ha-ha, whatever. But, you know, Mark, and he wasn't one of those people to throw that kind of stuff out, but it just like this, right?
Yeah.
Okay, fast forward. Mark goes missing. Mark dies. We do recover him. The village puts on a memorial service at sunset. Now, the day before, I'm flying back with Mark in my suitcase now, mind you, because they cremated him.
Yeah.
We're sitting on the beach, and a monster crowd of people come for this memorial.
Yeah.
I'm sitting on the beach. We actually have video. I'm sitting on the beach, and they have this beautiful ceremony that's starting, and out of nowhere, this dog comes, nowhere, sits beside me. I'm just in a loop. I don't even know where I am, right? My mind is, I mean, this is all, but this dog sits behind me, and Kirk gets my attention, and I'm like, what? And he's pointing at this dog.
Yeah.
That's the God dog.
What?
That's the God dog. And I, you know, what do you do with that? And it only stayed for a short bit, and then it took off and left.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Huh.
Right?
I have chills. Yeah.
So, anyway.
That's so wild.
The God dog.
And so that's why, I mean, she did. She
was very, yeah.
So sweet.
She doesn't even come up to me when I'm sad anymore.
Oh.
She does. She's like, oh, she's sad again. It's fine. Oh. She's fine. Yeah.
No, she's a sweetheart.
She really is. And she's
How old is she?
She's six.
Okay.
She's dead now. Her eyes are.
Yeah.
She's in dream world.
She's in great shape for six, too. She looks younger than that.
Yeah.
Doesn't she?
Beautiful
yeah.
Beautiful coat. Yeah.
What is she?
She's a mystery, but we do know that she's a black lab pit. And
then
maybe a few other things.
Okay.
But,
yeah.
Our dog, Chaser, was a shepherd lab.
Oh.
And
labs are so
was a beauty.
Great.
Yeah.
Labs are really good mixed stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
But,
absolutely.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She's always here. Do you guys... is there a special restaurant that you guys go to get seafood or at all, or any, or together, or?
Well, I'll tell you a story, Nonas, I love you. Nona Rosa, I'm going to say it, the best shrimp Frito, if you've never had it,
ooh,
everybody in the city has to go, because I've never seen anything like it ever, because I do look for unique, and the original owners, Tina and Francesco, they had sold now about a year ago, and it's still continuing as Nona Rosa, wonderful new ownership. They have a shrimp Frito, and what it is very large, almost... what do you call the large guys? The big.
The jumbos.
Yeah, jumbo goes beyond jumbo. But let's just say jumbo shrimp. What they do is they take the shrimp, they wrap it in
the angel hair
pasta.
Yep.
Oh. Ready? They flash fry it, bring it out, and imagine six jumbo shrimps wrapped in angel hair pasta. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Flash fried. Put on a plate and then drizzled with a lemon caper sauce.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I did have that once. And it's all coming back to
right?
me.
Right? Mm-hmm. Anyway.
And it comes like, I guess, it's like a tower.
And because the way the angel pasta kind of, when it fried, it just has its own, it's a piece of art. And
I
have to say the lemon caper sauce done when it's done right is decadent. And so I would say for me, that's one of the things that I just, have to have, and I think mm-hmm. by far, if they served it anywhere, yeah, I would go for that. So
mm-hmm.
Nona Rosa's in Robbinsdale, gotta go though.
Yeah,
shrimp Frito.
I love Robbinsdale.
I do too.
It's such a great community.
It's wonderful.
Ugh.
It is.
Yeah, the list goes on, and it's staying strong.
Yeah.
What about you? What
well, I don't know. Well, I don't necessarily go out looking for. I have so many food intolerances.
Oh, you too.
So I just have to be careful on where I go, and I can always find something to eat. I mean, I can even go to a burger joint and just order a burger without the bun and that kind of thing.
Celiac?
It's just a wheat intolerance.
Okay.
So I just stay away from gluten in general.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't do well in my system. But I don't know. So, I mean, if an expensive place I've been to over the years, actually two, would be Jack's Northeast and Murray's Downtown. And they both have been family-owned forever.
Yeah.
And
Minneapolis Staples are still around.
Yes, so I don't know. We don't necessarily go looking for seafood, I guess. But, well, Pub 42 is a pretty good walleye sandwich.
No, absolutely. And then I'm thinking, too, seafood. I'm thinking, I'll make sure I say it, Smack Shack, but not Smack Shack. 1029, lobster rolls, the hot or the cold. My Florida people, because I'm in Florida, so I can go anywhere in Florida and get it all. But I have my Florida friends that have been here now. And they are saying, hands down, the lobster rolls at the 1029. Again, I'm sure they're just fine at Smack Shack, same owner, same whatever. But maybe it's just because you're there. By far, some of the best lobster rolls I've ever had everywhere, anywhere, even in Florida.
Ooh,
so because we're talking falling out of and giant pieces, the lobster crab coming out. So, and they started at the 1029. Started at the 1029, and then they went brick and mortar and opened up Smack Shack, which is great. But if you like the, the old dive bar thing and... Ufta, yeah, really,
maybe,
really.
Maybe
good.
We need to take a trip there sometime.
Yes.
That sounds
you don't have to ask me twice. No. And their lobster macaroni and cheese, or their lobster bacon macaroni and cheese, out of this world. You know.
I love lobster. I love crab. I love seafood.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we eat it. I mean, in Florida too, Jeff. I mean, he'll call in the order at the grocery store down the road, and they'll heat it. They'll Old Bay it, season it. We pick it up hot, and we sit and eat crab legs or whatever, and just until you can't eat it anymore.
So question for you guys, especially Florida, going down to Florida, do you like your crab hot or cold?
As far as for me, I actually like a lobster roll. I have to say, I think I'm a little bit more partial to the hot now than the cold. But it doesn't really matter. I mean,
because like the legs, because I feel like here we always eat it hot, like freshly hot, but there they like flash freeze it or something. Or I don't know, is it, but it's always like cold. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know, but I think you can get it both ways, like I said.
Okay.
I mean, I just know that what's crazy is that there, it's very common that you just call it in at the grocery store and they'll steam it for you and you pick it up hot and seasoned and you bring it home and now you're, you have to do a darn thing.
What?
And they do that all the time. I'm just going to call in. I'm like, what? What do you mean? The grocery store. And I'm just going to have them steam it up for us. We're just going to swing by and pick it up.
Steamed is so much better, right? I mean, shrimp I eat cold, yum.
Yeah.
All day, but crab legs, you got to have that hot meat with that butter.
Well, the butter, absolutely. Freshly drawn butter. Wow, what a great time. Lots of fun. Thank you, Brittley, for having Bonnie and I.
Yeah.
A lot of emotion, sadness, happiness, but a great opportunity to talk about Stony today. So thank you for having us.
Yeah.
And so bye.
Bye. Let's do it again. Yeah.